KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. I am Joan. With me is
Caleb
and
Jason.
It sounds like Caleb's mic may not be working.
According to the it looks a little low on the recorder levels.
It looks like you guys are gonna have to share again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Caleb.
Much louder, perhaps. That could work, I think, as long as it's not picked up by the other microphones.
I don't know.
The recorder seems like I like it a little bit more than I talk like this. Now I sound like a 1920s announcer.
Yeah, I don't even hear you in my headphones. Huh. So, just
technical difficulties.
Yeah, just use Jason's mic.
Okay.
we're breaking the fourth wall, people. Just like something that we may be talking about a little bit later on the show.
Hooray!
There we go. I can hear you. All right, if you're unfamiliar with our show, we are a geek-centric talk show here on KCU Santa Clara. We talk about tech like
space!
Although space isn't really tech, but there's tech involved in space.
How about satellites?
Yes.
Sci-fi?
Like I said, tech in space, so.
I
covered
in space.
It's possible. With the Pokemons and stuff. And, of course, entertainment stuff like comic books and movies and video games. All that stuff that you know and love. We talk about it as much as we can before they throw us out. So, gents, how have you been since last we spoke on the airwaves?
Pretty good. That nice mellow weekend was kind of nice. A little frustrating trying to get to the station today. Someone tried to park to this way that we were weren't able to get that car out. So it was like, really? Come on, people. Come on. So, but other than that, it wasn't so bad.
Nothing. Didn't watch anything, play anything, nothing to just.
I have been playing some more of the new Tomb Raider.
There you go. Okay.
Which is so nice. It's like, you know, it's one of the things that you realize, wow, this game is really pretty, and you play it for a while, like, this game is actually really, really nice. Like, whenever I keep looking around the real world going, I think I can scramble up that and then jump from there onto that wire, slide down to that. Wait, no, I can't do that in real life. But yeah, it's been pretty good. How about you, Jason?
I don't think I've done anything like completely mind-blowing. I've been watching a ton of television series on the different YouTubes and whatnot. I was fairly happy about catching the new Walking Dead last night, and I don't know how spoilery we want to get about that at all.
I haven't watched it yet, so.
Okay, so full spoilers. Okay, so.
Hey, I can control your mic. So. I have that.
I thought it was brave of them to have the Star Wars Walking Dead crossover in the first place.
Yeah, makes sense. But figured it was coming.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is the place to be right now.
It's
so,
true.
Yeah.
Although I would have figured they would have crossed maybe with one of their other shows first before going into Star Wars territory.
Breaking Star Wars?
Well, or Better Call Saul, or
Better Call
their
Wars.
Their, yeah. Well, not, but never mind.
No, I gotcha. Yeah, and actually, that's the other thing, too. I ended up sort of prepping for the new season of Better Call Saul coming out. I'd heard good things, and so I wanted to catch up on the last season, plowed through all of that, And that got me in the mood for watching Breaking Bad, since I hadn't watched it like completely start to finish. I caught chunks of it, and I was really happy with what I had seen. But yeah, seeing it all the way from the beginning and seeing how it all syncs up to the Better Call Saul episodes that I ended up seeing sort of out of order. I mean, how do you work that these days with all the prequel stuff and whatnot? But anyway, I've been fairly happy with it. It's been pretty neat. And I'll be interested to see what another season of Better Call Saul ends up like, since I'm not sure if they're still doing prequel zone or if it's going to be outright after everything was said and done. So
they're going to jump ahead or something.
Yeah, I don't know. There's still plenty of room for prequel setting, it seems like, because there's some little personality traits that haven't 100% developed yet. So
okay.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a short series, right, as far as episodes?
Yeah, compared to let's see. No, it seemed pretty full length. It wasn't like 20 episodes or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
I think it was like a full cable series, so like 15.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
I think probably nowhere close. It was probably like 7 or 5. I'm not good at counting.
It's hard to tell too if you plow just straight through them all.
You lose track of time very quickly after the third cold cut sandwich that you've made sitting on the couch just drinking entire gallons of milk at a time.
It's taking in, that's all.
Exactly. You have to do it that way.
So how about you? What have you been up to?
I've been streaming some Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham, which is surprisingly, like, really a lot of fun. It's surprising in the sense that, not that Lego games aren't fun, but just, like, all the little details. Like, you'd think, like, okay, they're on the third Lego Batman game. Like, what else
could they possibly do?
Exactly. What else could they do? And I think they were smart to have it be Beyond Gotham. And we're, like, the second one, you got to kind of roam around Gotham City, like, kind of open world. This one's got, you know, the whole cast of the Justice League and the Green Lantern cast and everything in space and all that stuff. But what really gets me is just all the little details of, like, when you're Wonder Woman and you start flying, it starts playing the Wonder Woman theme song. You guys are going
to,
like,
fight,
just jump
in. We almost cracked our heads against each other. We both wanted to respond to that one.
Yeah. And then they do the same thing with Superman. When Superman starts flying, the Superman theme from the movie pops in. It's just like awesome little things like that. It's got
It's neat that it's the old school stuff too. I guess the newer stuff isn't necessarily as much of a signature thing for a lot of people. So
yeah, it still uses the, I guess it is old now, but the Batman 89 theme for a lot of the Batman like levels when it's playing. Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, classic one.
Yeah, the one from the
89 Batman from I'm blanking on his name.
From 89.
No. Yes, yeah.
The one with Topher Grace in it.
Probably.
Danny Elfman,
thank you. Yes, that theme. Yeah, they have that one. So it does it is a game targeted towards kids, but it does have those little tidbits to it that, like, probably a little kid won't get, you know, so it's maybe for that adult that's playing with their kid or something like that. But
makes sense.
So, you know, not all the jokes made me laugh, but I could tell, like, okay, this is aimed at a younger child, and it's still, you know, it's still grin and smile and that sort of thing. Like,
it's funny, like, I've noticed there's sort of a younger guy that works at my company that he whistles, and he whistles like stuff that I would not expect him to, like really old songs and still catchy stuff. But yeah, it makes me wonder how often stuff like that is going to end up popping up and just kind of stun people, just because the chances of a little kid like whistling the Wonder Woman song from the 70s show.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty decent chance that could happen.
Yeah, now with something like this, but Yeah, and then it has like Adam West, actual like Adam West that you can save in the levels and stuff so.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's cool that they're still it's the third Lego Batman game. They're still doing a cool job with finding little things to sprinkle throughout it. And
yeah, it's always fun to see like what sort of like little gags they add in. I was actually, one of my favorite touches that they added was the animations for the Flash.
Yeah.
When he moves around the screen, I'm like, that just looks so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And
yeah, it's like straight out of the television series, except more cartoony, which makes it look even better.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been having, and I grabbed it on sale during like the holiday thing that Xbox was having last year, and yeah, it's been worth like every penny. I was like, that's super cheap, like super cheap. I think I could stream that, why not? And then it's like, yeah, it's been worth its hell. It's maybe even been better than some games that have cost like normal price for streaming, you know, just fun wise.
Yeah, it has a really nice barrier for entry, or it has a really good hook for getting people to sit and watch for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't worry, you don't need to have played the previous games to jump into this one. So, you know, just if you're like, oh, well, that sounds really cool, but I never played Lego Batman 1 or 2, will I be lost? Like, it's cool. If you are familiar with the Batman characters and stuff, you know, you should be okay.
Yeah, it's a Lego game. They're not super dense on the gameplay structure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this one has like a fairly interesting story, you know, involving Brainiac and stuff like that. But yeah, just as you know, no need to worry about
the continuities and stuff like that. Yeah. I do like the multiple suits per character.
Yeah.
Thing. That's a really nice touch.
Yeah, I want to say they had that in the previous ones. That was one of the things they were doing, like Batman and Robin would have different suits.
You're right. I think I remember seeing that.
So I'm glad they've kept that and kind of expanded it and done little things and stuff, like
exploiting it nicely.
Yeah. Speaking of exploitation, Jason and I had the chance to see a certain film over the weekend also.
Yeah, we exploited the crud out of it.
Yes, we did. And it did us, I think.
Yeah, probably.
We're talking about Deadpool.
Ah, okay. One of my coworkers said he went to see it 3 times already.
Jeez, wow.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I don't know if I have that much dedication, but
that hurts my head.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
But yeah, I...
That's a lot of violence crammed into one weekend.
Yeah. Woo. you want to start, Jason?
Yeah. It's basically the very beginning of the movie ends up... I'm going to just walk through the entire movie.
Yeah.
Just scene by scene. No, the beginning of the movie...
And they'll just turn off your mic right now.
And just keep talking. But yeah, the beginning of the movie starts with what I think most of us have already seen. If we're keeping track of all of the stuff, it has that action scene with all of the gunfighting on the freeway.
Hmm.
And it, as delicious as all of the action was in what we saw there, they kick it up a few notches past that.
Yeah.
And the very opening, if you haven't heard already, they end up swapping out all of the names for the opening credits, and they just substitute it with like some D-bag and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a nice twist on everything right off the bat.
Yeah, it's interesting. It tells the story kind of out of order, you know, and then like, oh, here's some flashback here to catch you up, and then kind of pokes at fun at that and everything. I assume Jason would agree, but it was a fun movie. I would say, I think, you know, if you're a fan of Deadpool,
I would call it fun.
I think, you know, you would be happy with how he was portrayed. I personally don't know, like, while I, you know, I had fun with it and stuff like that, like, I don't know if I could be, like, the person you mentioned and see it, like, three times, like, that close with each other. And I'm...
Yeah,
I'm,
I was like, that's kind of intense, dude.
Yeah. And I'm kind of curious, too, like, how the character is going to end up being in the long run, because it's very... Like, you know, it's the fourth wall. It's like, it does all that stuff and it does a good job at it. I'm just curious, like, how long before that gets, like, an entire movie of it. Like, maybe him, like, mix into things, but that's where I'm going to be curious about.
Yeah, people are already throwing around a lot of really interesting ideas because the movie has done incredibly well. What, made close to 150 over the weekend, something like that. And anyway, it basically proves the viability of something that is a rated R comic book movie, even though they've tried it in the past and it hasn't really worked out in a lot of cases. I thought it was interesting because people are kind of going nuts, like, with their lists of, oh, well, here's all of the stuff that I'd make now that we know that this stuff works and people love it and so on. Mm. And I've seen people list movies that have already been made, like Ghost Rider.
Okay.
And it's like, well, no, they sort of tried that.
You need to,
yeah, you need to figure out something to kick it up a notch. And I think the sense of humor and how unique the sense of humor is what kind of put it over the top as far as that goes. So the people that it does click with, it probably works really well with. And I think the kind of younger generation who is used to sound bites of everything and YouTube versus, like, long things of drama,
it
very much fits with that sort of scenario really well, and it caters to a younger crowd perfectly. And it's just crazy enough that, and familiar enough to all of us old folk, that it doesn't feel completely beyond the pale. But it does end up sort of tiring. I think that's kind of what you were getting at.
Yeah.
And I have noticed a fair number of reviewers basically calling it out on that, saying that it doesn't feel like it has a lot of staying power. But the one thing that I've seen from a bunch of people that makes a lot of sense, especially since, I don't know how huge of a spoiler this is, but they're already throwing around the idea of having Cable as the next sort of pal for Deadpool in the next movie. And so a lot of people are saying that it should just outright be X-Force for the next one. And I'd really agree with that, because that would end up creating a much wider canvas for us to have more interesting characters that would kind of counteract Deadpool. And especially since right now Deadpool is the lead character in that series, it would fit fairly well, and you wouldn't have to skimp on him or anything like that.
Because I think some of the best stuff in the movie was him playing off of others. Like,
For
me, not all the jokes hit like that he did when he was just kind of doing stuff, but when he was, like, playing off of, like, Colossus or
TJ Miller and
some of the others, like, those were really good. Or the cab driver, like, when he was playing the subtle stuff, and, like, when he was just playing off people,
man, it was so much.
Those were, to me, were the best part. So that's why, you know, if they did go with, like, the next one as, like, a team thing or something like that, I think it would be a lot better than just another one of just him mostly. I think we would recommend it if you're a fan of Deadpool. If you're not a fan of Deadpool, don't bother seeing it,
because
I don't think it'll convert you. Like,
it's really what it comes down to. If you're okay with the sense of humor, you're probably still going to enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
But if you just don't think he's funny at all, don't bother. You're not going to see anything interesting.
It's a waste of your time.
Unless you're super into special effects. But even that, what was actually, I felt, was really smart about this movie is that it was really cautious about not trying to overdo itself either. It kind of knew what it was going for, and it didn't try and have a gigantic storyline with thousands of characters,
yeah,
and tons of different set pieces. I mean,
so it's no Avengers, what you're saying.
It is not Avengers. No. It is very far from Avengers. And from what I understand, it was a fairly low budget for a superhero type of movie also. I think it was like 56 mil, something like that, that they made it for. So they already made like more than their money back. Well, I've already heard that it's already the most profitable percentage-wise of any superhero movie.
Okay. That makes sense, yeah.
But yeah, I kind of hope that it means that we'll kind of get back to that. Because when we finished the movie, I turned to you and I said that I felt like this did right exactly what the Dread movie did right.
Mm.
It kept the mood of the characters kind of bottled up in a scenario that was very manageable and didn't try and overdo that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just focused on the quality of that stuff. And it did really well at that, and I thought.
Very cool. Looking forward to possibly checking that out. If it compares favorably into like not saying that the same, but like comparing it to Dread, that's definitely a mark of in favor of it for me. Like, because I really like the way that scenario played out. And if it's anything like that, I could see that working for Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean, just be cautious as far as like don't think it's style or like it's tone not the same like sense Dread. Of humor. It's more just like, hey, here's like a small budget. Mm-hmm. Let's focus it in one little area, pretty much, and like that's kind of how the movie is. They
grouped all the money into the things that they wanted to make sure they wanted to get right, and then you know.
But yeah, don't go thinking it's like the tone or the kind of the serious Dread, like going in like, well, this is nothing like Dread.
It is still Deadpool.
I can see
that point, but yeah.
Just want to make sure. And speaking of making sure, if you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website. And never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
Find our station faster by searching for our call letters, which are KSCU.
That's right. All right. So I'm thinking we take a quick music break and then we'll come back with the watch party unless there's anything else. Anyone wants to mention that they did or saw or played or made you feel?
No, I have nothing.
Okay, good. Because I didn't want to hear it.
Let's do some music. It'll be good.
All right. All right, we'll be back with more Robots Attack right after this.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. We are now in Watch Party. Devil is a part-timer. We're on episodes...
6 and 7, I believe.
7 and 8.
It was one of those round numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was that. So, let us start with 7.
Okay, so we've added a brand new character, and we get to find out tons and tons about them, in that we find out almost nothing about them in the first episode.
True. Yeah, but, well, she knows how to cook.
That's true.
We find that out.
She is very much in the archetypal good samurai wife/person character, like you see in a lot of different anime tropes, which was equal parts delightful and strange at the same time. Because like they even went in so far as to like when she showed up, they played like old school like Japanese music, like with the flutes and stuff. And I'm like, whoa!
Oh wow, I missed that.
Yeah, I was a little bit more into it because like the night before we watched Kagemusha, so like I was like primed for some of the audio cues and visual cues of an old school samurai movie, which
will come into effect greater effect later in the episode, but
So yeah, greater effect.
Before you get any further,
yes,
let me do a PSA.
You do
for
that.
The people.
This is for you people.
Yes. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. Through help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
It's also for all the pets out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, hopefully soon to be become pets out there.
There's still
so, yeah, episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the character again? The new girl.
Oh, man.
Don't say Deschanel.
Suzuno.
Suzuno, okay.
Suzuno Kazumuki.
Okay. So, yeah, basically she ends up being, like, every single, 1800s, 1900s stereotype of Japanese culture that you can possibly throw onto the screen. And she's the smallest character that they've had so far, by far. I think she's, like, 3 feet tall.
It's a fight between her and the pink-haired girl for the shortest character.
No, the pink-haired girl, she's got an extra, like, half a head on her, I'm pretty sure. It might be the hairdo that might be doing it, but...
A little extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and this is down to, like, all of the clothing, how she talks, and everything, at least according to how the other characters are interacting with her, since I'm not that familiar with how, like, Japanese speech is a little bit different, but... By what we have heard from other characters,
yeah.
She's very proper and everything.
Yeah, it does feel much more formal than the others. Like they feel like they would be like speaking like fairly normal language, and like she sounds like she's speaking like as if she were doing like a period piece play kind of style.
Funny you should say that. We'll get back to that later.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the little throwback to the when she's talking about, oh, yes, the landlady. And so she said to come to you guys.
Oh, right.
She sent a letter and it's like all slow and she slows her speech.
Everybody did the eye twitch.
No, that's why.
So, yeah. So she's officially the new next door neighbor. There's not a lot of explanation as far as why she's there and whatnot. We had a bunch of wild speculation the last time because she was introduced by her falling down the stairs into the arms of another character and so on.
Sadao.
The Satan devil character.
Or Mao, whatever one you want
to. And yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. And I think we actually kind of hit on some of it just about right when we find out a little bit later.
And next episode, we'll get into that.
Yeah, the interesting twist of this one is that it shows that there is a much stronger connection between the other world and this world because the friend of
Emmy.
Emmy sent over a group of magical potions.
Yeah, so this answers our question of how Emmy is gonna like get her sort of powers back. And you know, we kind of speculated, oh, would it be sort of the reverse maybe of Mao's and stuff like that? And
yeah, it's weird how scientific it is. Yeah.
No, it's just some liquid that other characters
I still think there's going to be a catch. There's going to be something where it's going to be the embodiment of what I was saying before. It's going to be whatever is in those potions, it's the physical manifestation of faith in that character.
Well, it's possible that since they went into detail about, okay, you have to drink one in the morning and then one in the afternoon. You can't, if you skip the one in the afternoon, you can't drink two, or one right. in the morning, you can't drink two. Like, so there's a chance that something like that's going to happen. So mm-hmm. maybe going off of yours, Jason, maybe that's what like gets her back in fighting shape.
No, who knows?
Who knows? But.
Yeah, they also show off that it does work because she has a bit of a showdown with some random person that, as near as we can tell, comes from the other world. Because they have a scythe and they fight with, and they have a magical I-beam thing. Mm. And
it was all very sci-fi, but it was pretty neat too. Mostly because it ends up happening like outside of a convenience store. I love that she's sort of saved by the convenience store attendant, like, yes. throws tomatoes at him or something.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Because and then the second in command is like, it's apparently hot in Japan right now. Mm-hmm. He's got like heat fatigue or something. Yes. So that's why she's helping. This yeah. new character's helping them. Kind
and
of
she
like,
feels bad because her gift to them for the entire falling down the stairs incident was this giant crate of apparently like reasonably good but not supremely awesome noodles.
Yeah.
And like fresh noodles. And so she's trying to get them to eat as many of them as possible before they spoil.
Yeah.
And unfortunately that means that they're eating a bunch of hot stuff on hot days. Uh-huh. And apparently that's what gives that character heat stroke.
Yeah.
And she feels even worse about that. So that's why she gets in this kind of recurring role of cooking more and more uh-huh. and more for them. Because like, it keeps causing more problems.
Yeah. I like, too, that they're, like, trying to teach Ushi, what's his name? Basically, Lucifer.
Yes, but, yeah.
Yeah, Ushi. What's the name that they... It's like Ushi... some long U name.
Ushihara,
okay. Yeah, like... No, don't you know how to do anything? Like, you're supposed to, like, hang these clothes so they don't dry correctly. And they're like, oh, can you, okay, grate the ginger. Can you handle a grater at least? Like,
yeah, he's
oh,
totally turning
out.
Into
like,
stereotypical teenage boy.
Yeah. Like, shut in. Teenager, like, oh, it's not my fault.
Yeah, and the other kind of, like, plot issue is that a new rival fast food joint is opening up across the way from McDonald's, and the shift manager is going to be going away for some reason and leaving Sadao in charge.
Mm.
In dire times because yes. of this new opening. Yeah. What's the name? It's like a KFC.
Yeah, it's like it's SFC. It's like Sentuki Fried Chicken. It's yeah, like it's okay. it's instead of Kentucky, Sentucky. It's like yeah, it's Kentucky. It's like so. Okay.
Yeah,
but I think that's more in the next episode. We get more
right.
into that.
That's
so
what that really shows up. But it does get mentioned because yeah. she's like, if we fail, I get sent to Greenland.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So yeah.
Should we jump into the next episode then?
The last thing that is the big thing for this episode is that it's revealed, sort of, quote-unquote, that this new next-door neighbor has the hots for the Satan character.
Yeah.
And so, basically, the hero character confronts her and tries to say, like, well, you really need to keep your distance. This
yeah,
guy
that's true.
Is
yeah.
not, like, the ideal guy or anything like that, and you need to watch out. And that's when she ends up kind of spilling a long, drawn-out thing about, very carefully worded but drawn-out
yeah.
Thing about how she needs to be around this guy.
Yeah.
And also, we get a very humorous moment with the little girl that works with Sarao because the neighbor makes him lunch. Chizoku or something like that. I have to look it up again. But
cheesy.
One day, Mao brings a bento box lunch, and it's all like super well crafted, hand done stuff. And yeah, she's like, and she's "Oh like, my
she
god!"
Freaks out. Oh no! Because yeah. she made him on Shrew before. And
well, yeah. I mean, it was perfectly done too, because it was not just like the bento with all of the like wonderful stuff in it, but like the bottom layer of the box has like a Valentine cake in it, like a full size Valentine cake. So yeah.
But yeah, what you brought up, Jason, is important, because it does get
exactly
mentioned.
I tried to phrase it as carefully as
yeah.
I could.
So speaking of the next episode, so let us jump into episode 8, where we find out more of actually who this person is, and I think I was right.
Yeah. Okay, so the way that it all comes about is that she's still sticking around all the time, still cooking for them all the time, and it comes up that, well, why do you always wear the same, like, really super traditional clothes? Why do you always talk super traditionally? And she didn't really have a good answer other than that she just didn't have other clothes.
Uh-huh.
And so that's when the hero character kind of steps up and offers to take her out shopping to allow her to adjust a little bit better to the current world and
yeah.
so on. And that's when a bunch of stuff ends up kind of spilling out like, oh, so many beans.
And it was nice, because when you discover like why she's this way and certain things, mm-hmm. like I was kind of getting to the point where, like, oh no, is this show turning into like, oh, the traditional Japanese girl is going to be with the, you know, his coworker and this love story thing. And I was like, I'm, have no interest in any of that. I know
yeah.
other people do. So, but I'm so glad the show like explained why she was doing all this stuff. I'm like, okay, thank goodness this wasn't that.
Yeah, like, the show is like several times now, like built up a classic anime trope and then like kicked out the legs from underneath it and said, no, that's actually not what we're doing, guys. Calm down.
Yeah, it's yeah.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah, I like, oh, I watched a bunch of shows and read some stuff about this, and then the, you know, Emmy's like, wait, you are from there? And she's like, yeah, you didn't know that I was? And then it goes back to the conversation that,
exactly.
that Jason brought
so
up.
It turns out that the way that she worded the entire conversation could have been taken two ways. It's that she was there to take out Sato, or to help, like, remove him, or it could be taken as him or her going after him romantically.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, that's where all of the confusion came from, at least between her and the hero character. So, yeah, it is, like, the big reveal that she is actually from the other realm and whatnot. But yeah, specifically, she really loves samurai dramas. And so that's why she based all of the way that she was talking and clothing herself
yeah.
in on all of that.
Yeah, and I got the impression that she was in the episode 6 or one where there's that underground meeting with all of the church
yeah,
leaders.
Yeah, she's that chick
her.
In the
yeah.
robes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we sort of guessed that. We didn't have any way to support that. It was just too convenient that we find out about these two characters in the same episode and whatnot.
Yeah.
And one had like lighter blue and one had darker blue hair and one seemed to be quite a bit older and younger, but all of that has been like flipping all over the place depending on what side of the gate people end up on anyway.
Yeah.
So the only exception that we've seen so far is the one mage and the fighter guy that of the hero's friends. They're the only ones that haven't changed at all when they
yeah,
make the jump between the two places. And I think when they showed Lucifer before, he had like outright had like a skeletal face and everything. It's like, wow, okay, yeah, that's a swap right there.
It also could have been a helmet.
No, I'm going with skeletal
Whoa.
Face.
Fight. But yeah, I also like her reasoning too of why she chose of like, I studied the history This was the longest period in Japan. This is the most, and compared it. So in that thinking, oh, then clearly this is the how I should be mm-hmm. because, you know, time and everything, but yeah. It's not.
There's a lot of logic to it.
Yeah.
And 200 some odd years of that as the status quo for Japan, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're in the modern age. Like, yeah, I can see that you would be, that would be a curious transition.
And I like, too, that, like, how the previous episode ends with the Chiyoho. You know, she, like, the door opens and she's, like, freaking out. And so mm-hmm. it plays up on that thing of, like, oh, no, is this that she's going to see them, like, oh, an awkward moment of they fell into each other's arms or something silly like that.
Right.
But then it turns out, like, oh, it's just cooking. And then, you know, it's like she's super excited, but like, oh, you were making this. And it's just like, oh, thank you. That was nice. And then her kind of whole thing, too, about like when she's walking with Mao, mm-hmm. you know, when he's at his bike and, you know, they have the conversation like, so aren't you like kind of freaked out that we're demons or, you know, all that right. sort of stuff. And she's like, yeah, you know, it is, but I liked you before I knew that. And, you know, it's my decision if I want to stop liking you and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. It was like, that was nice to kind of have her character have that instead of just like kind of always like the, oh no.
Yeah. But the question that I assume is still in the back of Mao's head is whether that initial magic manipulation mm-hmm. that he did on her father is still affecting her bloodline somehow. And so I still wonder if that's going to end up being kind of the question that ends up being the big deciding factor on how some big thing ends in at the end of the series.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're getting close and closer to that. And two, there's only a handful of episodes left.
Only five episodes left, I think, because it's 13 episodes series. So
yeah,
crazy.
So it's gotta.
Well, in fairness, I don't know if this is like the whole series or not. So
season, it'll be the end of the available episodes. So
true.
Yeah, I don't know if there's. Have you seen anything about multiple seasons of the show? Because it's
I purposely tried to like go into this as cold as possible, so kind of affected.
Because I wonder when the series first dropped.
It hasn't been that long ago.
The initial release date was the 2012.
Oh, I would think
so. Forever ago.
I think
was completely wrong on that.
No, that's for the manga. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So I was completely right.
So I was going to say, like, they'd be a season two by now if there were going to be more.
Not always. Sometimes season twos in animes take forever to make. I mean, look how long we've been waiting for Attack on Titan.
Yeah, that's different, though. I mean,
that's different.
Well, I think that was kind of like a surprise hit to everyone. I mean, if you compare that to Devil's a Part-Timer, nothing against Devil's a Part-Timer, but the scale
I am comparing like, it
animation wise like
looks like the first episode aired in Japan in 2013, so it's been a few years, but yeah. Animation takes a little while. It's hard to say. It may
Whatever.
Whatevs.
I'm just gonna say it ends at 13.
That's right. We're calling it.
But I'm sure the manga goes on for longer. But
yeah, there's one of them just dropped this year. So
there you go. There's the manga.
And then it crosses over with DBZ also.
I hope so. No, I hope Dragon Ball.
That makes more sense.
That would be a nice drop.
I mean, obviously, DBZ happens in the future, and this is very modern. So
it's true.
It's true. It's probably going to end up being like the prequel for all of it. It's going to explain where Goku actually got his powers. Because, I mean, that Saiyan thing has always been a little bit shaky.
Yeah. Speaking of shaky things, you're listening to this rambling madness here on KSU Santa Clara. So anything else we want to say before we wrap up Watch Party? Or
I'm looking forward to seeing how the next episode goes, because this one ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, since like the I mean, as in terms of like the storyline doesn't actually episode because it doesn't complete all the story bits, like the because it ends with the Arcial, the second in command, like being sent in as a spy into the Kentucky fried yeah. chicken to find out like what they're doing, and the owner of the Kentucky came over and like tried to like poach
yeah,
Mao
the manager,
from
yeah.
yeah. the store and stuff. And then he like totally creeped on Gio.
Yeah. Oh wait, never mind. Hey, hot stuff. Why don't you make a to go order for me? Oh yeah.
Like, oh no.
Yeah. It seems like it makes sense. Japanese love the chicken over there, so mm-hmm. I could see why Kentucky fried chicken and wash it down with some Moonbucks coffee. If you caught
yes.
that one too.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually saw a similar one to that in a movie that I was watching just the other day.
Oh.
And so it was like, what are they sharing notes or what's going on here?
Yeah. There's a collaboration. If you're using like, okay, this is the one you have to use for the Starbucks knockoff. Mm-hmm. It's Moonbucks. Oh.
Yeah. So like the it's a dude on the logo instead of Starbucks, the mermaid. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of clever.
Yeah, I love that it perfectly fits with the series that a big cliffhanger ending is something like somebody going into a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
It's like it shouldn't work, but it totally does.
Yeah. All right, well, like we say every week, it's not too late to join us in the watch party.
That's right. It's not too late. You can leave your comments, leave your thoughts. You can see our and hear our thoughts on the earlier episodes by going to robots facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme, and the archives are at robotsattack.me.
That's right. And of course you can go to all those places to interact with the show while it's going on and even when the show's over with, because you know we post stories. And a lot of times they have cool pictures or videos and stuff like that. So if you want to go or go and, you know, read the rest of the articles that we talk about. And
yeah, because we just, all we have is time to give you the summaries.
We're children of the 90s, so we are a multimedia organization.
Nice.
Encarta, eat your heart out.
We're all about that multimedia.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of multimedia, why don't we drop some new releases for everyone?
Sounds good.
Okay, we're going to start out in the theater, dropping this week, just some. We've got a film called Race. Jesse Owens' quest to become the greatest track and field athlete in history thrusts him onto the world stage of the 1936 Olympics, where he faces off against Adolf Hitler's vision of Aryan supremacy. And we have Risen, follows the epic biblical story of the resurrection as told through the eyes of a non-believer. Clavius, a powerful Roman military tribune, and his side Lucius are tasked with solving the mystery of what happened to Jesus in the weeks following the crucifixion in order to disprove the rumors of a risen Messiah and prevent an uprising in Jerusalem. And we have The Witch, New England, 1630. Upon threat of banishment by the church, an English farmer leaves his colonial plantation, relocating his wife and five children to a remote plot of land on the edge of an ominous forest, within which lurks an unknown evil. Strange and unsettling things begin to happen almost immediately. Animals turn malevolent, crops fail, and one child disappears as another becomes seemingly possessed by an evil spirit. Is everything okay? Seemed like you were okay. You're like things. It seemed like things were going crazy. With suspicion and paranoia mounting, family members accuse teenage daughter Thomasin of witchcraft. Charges she admittedly denies. As circumstances grow more treacherous, each family member's faith, loyalty, and love become tested in shocking and unforgettable ways. And wrapping up, this one I picked specifically for a certain someone. It's called Forsaken. In 1872, John Henry Clayton, played by Kiefer Sutherland, retires as a gunfighter and returns to his homeland of Fowler, Wyoming, in hope of repairing his relationship with his estranged father, Reverend Clayton, played by Donald Sutherland.
What?
Not That's officially too much Sutherland.
However, he soon learns that the town is in turmoil as the railroad will be coming through the area.
Well, of course
area.
It is. It's all that Sutherland.
Yep. And but they all want to see the railroads coming through. They all want to see the Sutherlands. They're coming through the area, and a criminal gang is terrorizing ranchers who refuse to sell their land.
I mean, that's where it's all going wrong. They're in the Westerlands, and they're Sutherlands. I mean, everything's out of balance.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not quite wanting that much Sutherland, you might consider some of these Blu-rays and DVDs. Black Mass on Blu-ray and DVD. A star-studded cast brings the story of Whitey Bulger to brings to life the story of Whitey Bulger, who was brought in to take down the Italian mafia in Boston. He then went on to become the most powerful gangster in Boston. Then there is Steve Jobs on Blu-ray and DVD, a fictionalized film loosely based on the Walter Isaacson's biography about the life of Steve Jobs. The film focuses on three major keynote presentations made by Mr. Jobs. Then there is Trumbo on Blu-ray and DVD. Dalton Trumbo was a very successful Hollywood screenwriter, a talent that found his career abruptly cut short because of the massive blacklisting of talents during the era of McCarthyism. And then rounding it out with The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, on Blu-ray and DVD. This film delves into the rise and fall of one of the most influential voices in racial equality.
Okay, meanwhile, in the very special world of video games, you know, this one's been teasing for a long time because it's been in all sorts of different incarnations and testing phases and whatnot, and mostly I'm just angry at it because it's not on Xbox. Street Fighter V is coming out on the 16th for PS4, PC, and Linux. Not Xbox, but Linux. Oh, anyway, moving right on. Had to throw an Xbox win into this, albeit a small one. Rocket League, first released way back in July 11th of 2014, but all of you Xboxers out there are finally getting your chance at it. It's going to have exclusive content right up the Xbox alley with Gears of War type vehicles and whatnot. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see if it's how well it does, if people are still interested in it or...
Yeah, it's still solid gameplay no matter how you slice it, and hopefully people that didn't get a chance to play it before will be newly enamored by it now, but we'll see. This is one that I found out about a long time ago, that I actually heard about it as some sort of small government initiative, but I thought it was really interesting, especially now that it is officially out. It's No Pineapple Left Behind, coming out on February 18th for PC, Mac, and Linux. It basically is a satire of being in charge of a high school filled with pineapples, and you get to decide how well you want to educate your pineapples.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Figure out if you want to leave some of them behind or not.
Never.
Right. No, none of them. Call that chopper. Airlift them out of here because we can't leave them behind. Okay, finally, we have Layers of Fear. It's coming out of early access and into full release on the 16th. Coming to PC, Macs, yeah, not Macs. Well, as in Mac, plural, Macs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not MAX. Mostly that Linux was the next one. It threw me off because it had an X. But also in terms of X, it's coming to Xbox One and PlayStation 4. So yeah, that one actually sounds pretty interesting because it's basically a painter that has went fairly crazy and is trying to create his how do you say it, the magnum opus, is a yes, he loves magnums and and the comic opus, and he's trying to make a piece of art about it.
Huh.
and it's supposed to be very scary.
Is it on Linux?
Well, yeah, that's the scariest part.
Oh. Ah.
Magnum Opus is masterwork.
Well, wait, so if you have a Magnum, you have a master? Mm-hmm. That sounds weird. I was driving my master the other day.
Well, here's something that you can drive, sort of, but it's not weird. Mm. It's bicycle safety.
Yay!
The city of Santa Clara wants to remind bicyclists that whether daytime, dawn, dusk, foul weather, or at night, please do what you can to be seen by motorists and increase your visibility by wearing light or bright colored clothing. Following the law that states you must wear lights and reflectors at night. During darkness, bicyclists must have the following equipment. Either write this down, remember it in your head if you're driving, you know.
Tattoo it to your hand.
Yes, something. A front lamp, a rear red reflector, and, this is in caps, a white or yellow reflector on each pedal or on the bicyclist's shoes. For more information on bicycle safety, visit the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration at nhtsa.gov.
Yeah, please do that, because all of us old fogies out there, we don't like hitting people with our cars, and we like avoiding it, and it makes it easier.
Yep.
To avoid that, so yeah.
But here's something you don't want to avoid.
And that's this week's pull list for comic books. There's Batman and Robin Eternal, number 20. Bruce's mother appears in the modern age, and the whole Bat family faces a new and unexpected weapon. Over at Marvel, it's Power Man and Iron Fist, number 1. The heroes for hire bromance is back. The Fist's magic and hired goons will fly as the force of Power Man and Iron Fist get to the bottom of a new mystery. And from Dark Horse, it's Tomb Raider, 2016, number 1. Lara, the ever-impetuous and thrill-seeking, is on a grand adventure. This one features a foe that seems to have difficulty staying dead. Over at Image, it's Snowfall, number 1. The environment has had a radical crash, and in the year 2045, there is no snow. The power has been consolidated into the hands of the Hazeltine Corporation, and now a singular figure fights back against the structure of this new world, using the forces of nature as a weapon. And then Archie Comics, number 6. Friendships can be a challenge, and currently Archie and Jughead are not talking. Now Archie finds that he...
No!
Now Archie finds that he must face the heat of Hiram Lodge alone, because even Veronica's keeping out of her dad's way. And our fine friends at Wow Cool have a few that you might want to check out if you prefer a more independent bend. There's Crickets, number 5, from Sammy Hackerman. Harkham. Then there's Puke Force, hardcover by Brian Chippendale. Revenger, Volume 1, by Charles Forsman. And Special Forces, Volume 1, by Kyle Baker.
All right. I'll wrap us up with some music. Okay, open up. We've got Living on a High Note by Mavis Staples, produced by M. Ward, the latest release from the R&B/soul singer, feature songs written for her by such artists as Aloe Black, Benjamin Booker, Nico Case, Nick Cave, Ben Harper, Tune Yards,
who are local,
and Justin Vernon. And we have, of course, everyone's favorite Beatle, Yes, I'm a Witch Too by Yoko Ono. The sequel to her 2007 remix album features collaborations with such artists as Peter Bjorn and John, Death Cab for Cutie, Sean Lennon, Moby, Penguin Prison, Portugal the Man, Mike Snow, Sparks, and Tune Yards.
What? Tune
Yards. We have Painting With by Animal Collective. A.V. Tar, Geologist, and Panda Bear created shorter songs for the trio's 11th full-length release that features collaborations from Colin Stetson and John Cale. And we have...
Not like the vegetable.
Nope. Void Beat / Invocation Treks by Cavern of Antimatter. A debut full release for the trio that includes Stereo Labs' Tim Gain, John Dilworth, and Synth Mestrio Holger Zepp. Features guest appearances from Deer Hunter's Bradford Cox, Spaceman 3's Sonic Boom, and Mouse on Mars, Jane St. Werner. Okay. And then we have Love Yes by Teen. That's all in caps. So it must mean something. The third full-length release for the Brooklyn-based band was produced by Daniel Schlett. All right. That's some new releases. We're going to take a quick music break and then wrap up the show with the news. Let's tease them some news.
One of the biggest events in space physics,
ooh,
or astrophysics, technically.
Psh, take this with your space physics. Russia wants to nuke some asteroids.
Whoa. All right. That and more when we return here on KSU Santa Clara.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. We are in the news. Let's news them.
All right. I'm going to start with one of the biggest events in current cosmology. We have found...
Cosmetology, you mean?
No, cosmology, the study of the universe and the history of the universe. Several people believe they have found evidence of gravity waves. Now,
what?
If the name sounds vaguely familiar, but you can't quite place your finger on why that's band, important. Right? No, that was not a band. The gravity waves are evidence of the fabric of space-time, the quote-unquote material of the universe itself. And because of these gravity waves, we have made the most direct observations of black holes to date. The reason why they found the gravity waves is because a pair of black holes collided together to make a super black hole.
Whoa.
And with that much energy being displaced at once, they actually were creating gravity waves big enough that the detectors built here could... there's evidence that the detectors here have found actual gravity waves. So that's two major events in scientific and space science in one go. This is crazy cool.
Yeah, I'd heard a sort of a way to explain it is, imagine if you were watching movies without sound, mm-hmm, for your whole life, like that's just silent film, mm-hmm, and then suddenly now there's sound.
Exactly.
Like that's how much of a difference is if you watch, you know, compare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the astrophysicists are like flipping their lids right now. Like, Einstein was right. 100 years ago, he predicted that this would be a thing, and it's totally a thing. And the full impact of all of these discoveries is still yet to be fully determined, but the fact that we have the evidence to support this, one, proves that the black holes are not just, you know, X-ray generators and stuff like that, but they are literally warping space as we know it, and we've actually been able to detect that deformation, and we can sort of see it, for lack of a better phrase, since you can't see a dark thing in a dark space.
Just needs to put some lights on it or something, a little
mm-hmm
glowy.
Yeah, we'll just
bracelet or something.
Yeah, throw some Tron programs at it, and we'll
or the reflectors for the bikes.
There you go.
Like, oh, I see a black hole. Okay. Woo, I almost crashed into you, buddy. Thanks for putting on those reflectors.
Thanks for wearing reflective fabric.
Yeah, thank you. Boy, I would have just been silly. So I'm going to do my story next because it sort of involves space.
Okay.
Do it.
No, it's fine. It's
just in the sense that it's a novel for a series that takes place in space. It looks like the novel Star Wars Bloodline will focus on Leia's move from princess to general. So, family memories and a haunted past are the main themes that author Claudia Gray will explore in her upcoming novel Star Wars Bloodline. Gray told USA Today that the events in the novel take place years before The Force Awakens and follow Leia's transition from princess to general. Leia will be a senator in Bloodline, and a large portion of the book will focus on helping the new generation of senators and lawmakers remember the importance of the rebellion and the devastation the Empire caused. Gray said the book would take place decades after the fall of Darth Vader at the height of a peaceful New Republic. Bray also confirmed that Leia's family would play a large part in the book and the development of the senator. The author said that while the novel isn't just about Leia as a mother or sister, there would be disastrous developments from within her own family. It's a theme, Gray said, that would have, quote, pretty far-reaching repercussions for several characters. Star Wars Bloodline is a direct follow-up to Star Wars Aftermath, written by Chuck Wendig. Aftermath was released last year before The Force Awakens. Bloodline will be released May 3rd, and an excerpt of the novel can be read on USA Today's website. So there you go. That'll be interesting because, yeah, the movie doesn't really address a lot of that stuff. It just, like, mentions kind of little things, but it doesn't really go into that chunk of time from, you know, the end of Jedi to now where she is in the film. Like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay, so if you have been staying awake at night just pouring sweat off of you because of the thought of an asteroid coming and, like, smearing the Earth across space itself, Russia is here for you. They've got a plan, and that plan involves using their nuclear warheads. Of course, I mean,
gotta use them for something,
right? I mean, they're just sitting around doing nothing otherwise. So you got to get in the asteroid smearing business. That sounds political or something. Basically, Russian scientists have gotten together a bunch of mathematics and whatnot to figure out that one of their intercontinental ballistic missiles that is got a nuclear warhead on it, if properly retrofitted, could be the perfect asteroid busters. They cite the fact that all of our space missions that we run right now basically require a whole bunch of kind of prep time, because the components needed have to be prepped to a certain boiling point in order to make them function correctly and so on.
Okay.
Whereas all of the Russian intercontinental ballistic missiles, basically the giant things that you see on trucks that look really menacing, they actually use solid fuel, just like model rockets or whatnot. I'm sure there's probably more scientific stuff in them than model rockets, because now, thanks to YouTube, we can all make model rockets. But anyway, the idea is that since it's already a solid state rocket that can be lit at a moment's notice, it ends up being a much better weapon for surprise asteroids. Which, I mean, that's like one of the worst surprises ever, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants a surprise asteroid.
Yeah. Because I don't think we're sending Bruce Willis up there with a team.
Well, I mean, eventually, you never know. He seems like he might be up for that. I'm sure we can still have an awesome soundtrack to go along with him on that journey. But if that's not the case, we do have Russia's plan of converting these missiles. Now, they want to test this as quickly as possible, and by as quickly as possible, I mean in the year 2036. Apparently, there's a well-known near-Earth asteroid, and I'm sure this is, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I totally know that one. We're on a first-name basis. We, like, talk every Tuesday and Thursday. But me, personally, this was a new thing to me. Apophis is this well-known Earth or well-known near-Earth asteroid. And so Russia wants to blow it up in 2036. So they're basically prepping for all of that, and they want to become the go-to asteroid killers on this planet. Which, I mean, I think it's sad that America's gotten out of the asteroid-killing business. I think we were contenders at a certain point. And it's just sad, I mean, handing over that title.
Is it just me, or does it seem like this plan was came up with by Torg from Borderlands?
It very well could be.
Rockets, explosions!
Maybe someone was playing that, and they're like, you know, that Torg guy's got some good ideas. What if we...
Right. I mean, the main storyteller in that game has a Russian accent, so... It might be that same guy. He's probably an actual scientist heading up all of this stuff. I really don't know.
Well, the way it is. You can let us know out there.
Right. Let us know, Russian scientists.
Yeah. Tweet us or Facebook us or...
what have you.
Yes.
Friend face us.
You know, here's something, though, that doesn't require, like, having scientific background or... being Ooh, able to get on to asteroids
right
in
my alley.
And blowing it up and
okay.
stuff like that.
Okay, I'm ready.
Did you know that a well-placed shade tree can reduce energy costs, filter pollution, and even increase property values? Our City Forest is a 501c3 nonprofit working to cultivate a sustainable community and vibrant urban forest. Our City Forest offers free trees to be planted in schools, parks, and residential parking strips in San Jose. More information is available by calling 408-998-7337 or visiting ourcityforest.org.
Well, that sounds like a worthwhile thing. Another thing that could be worthwhile, depending on what your particular bend is a free game engine. And
what?
From none other than the fine folks at Amazon?
You've heard of that company before. It shouldn't be a surprise to you.
Oh, I've heard of Amazon, but I forgot that I was not expecting them to be releasing their own game engine.
Oh, you mean Jungle?
Yes, Jungle.
Call back to...
Jungle.co.jp.
Devil's part-timer.
Yes. But,
Circular.
Everything links up here.
Yes. In case you haven't heard or been paying attention, like Amazon's been trying to move into being more of a media production company beyond just being the distributor of pretty much everything you'd want to buy on the internet almost.
Yeah. Yeah, they hired a bunch of game designer mm-hmm. people too.
Yeah.
Back.
And now they're actually doing some, they're kind of like putting the fruits of the labor out into the world. And one of the first things is their new game engine called Lumberyard, which is designed to be kind of a...
got wood.
It's an SDK, a software development kit designed for making AAA games, VR games, or mobile games. Like, it's designed to be like... Okay. It's sort of like Unity... which is another game engine you may or may not have heard of that powers a lot of the games that have shown up both on Xbox and on the web and in the independent gaming world.
Mm.
Pretty popular. But yeah, there's...
So this is going to be like that?
It's going to be kind of like that.
That's
where
what they're shooting for?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's actually open sourced, but the license is free. So you can build things on it. I think if... It looks like it's one of those that when you reach a certain level of, like, if you do earn something kind of income, I think that at a certain point there is a licensing fee, but I'm not positive about that.
Oh, okay.
But it's, you know, for most people that are, like, writing their first game, no? Okay, I'm wrong. it's free as in beer. Get it while you can. The
don't
engine,
drink and drive.
No, do not drink and drive. The game engine is designed to be multi-platform as well, so you can design a game once and have it just slightly tweaked everywhere, so to speak. So
okay, so this is something that they want it to be on consoles, PCs, mm-hmm. and
they
VR,
want,
and everything.
Yeah, they want
okay.
people to take this and spin it into as many places as possible because Amazon would love to sell you even more of the things that Amazon's already selling you.
The way that they're planning on making money on it is actually twofold. They have a secondary service that is the multiplayer side of it that they are going to charge for that. And so they're hoping to make it super easy to build multiplayer games, which have been proven to be the big money makers and really grab people's attention. And then the second thing is Twitch is going to be baked into it.
Okay.
That was the other thing that I forgot about.
They bought Twitch, so good
one. Good for something. Now also that makes the Create channel on Twitch even more interesting in certain ways. Like, you know, it has a new dimension to it.
True, true.
Yeah. You watch someone design something for, was it Lumberyard?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of developing video games, it looks like Titanfall 2 will have a single player campaign.
Ooh. Boo.
Titanfall sequel will have a single player campaign, though it won't release until late this year or early next, said lead writer Jesse Stern. My guess is probably next year. Stern told Forbes Titanfall 2 will take place in a world both scientific and magical, but is still grounded, dirty, human, and real. Respawn Entertainment's development team began working on the sequel in 2014 after finishing Titanfall's downloadable content. Quote, one of the shortcomings of the first game was we just did not have the mechanisms to tell everyone, here's who you are, here's where you are, and who's around you, Stern said. We knew all the answers, we just could not deliver it. Back in October, Titanfall sales passed 10 million. That's solid. Given the studio flexibility in exploring the story it originally wanted to tell, Stern said Respawn is looking to, quote, deliver a vision of grand global colonial warfare and retell the story of the American Revolution and the American Civil War in space. Stern also told Forbes Respawn is working in partnership with Lionsgate TV to develop a Titanfall spin-off TV series.
Now you got my attention.
The problem, Stern said, is its cost. Quote, it would be very expensive, he said. We are trying to find a way to tell a story in the worlds we want to be in and produce in the TV model. Respawn founder and CEO Vince Zampella confirmed that the Titanfall sequel will not be an Xbox exclusive like the first one was. On PC also, but, and will launch on all major platforms. Respawn is also partnering with Nexon to bring a new original Titanfall game to iOS and Android. Set to release sometime this year. So, there you go. I wonder if that will perhaps spark some more interest in the series.
I still feel like it did solidly enough the first time around that, I mean, ended up allowing them to make a second one with a single player campaign, so...
Yeah.
I'm just torn because I'm one of the people that almost never plays a single player anymore, so.
No. Well, you wouldn't be forced to play it, so.
No, I would be. They would chain me to it. Yeah. No, the big debate at this point for a lot of game developers is whether to put the money into more content for multiplayer or more content for single player. So that's what it comes down to.
Well, it was definitely lacking both when it released, in my opinion.
Fair
the
enough.
First one, so.
Okay, here's something that is also lacking in both because it never happened, but it was one of those things that is a glorious what if it would have happened, just because it was actually in the millwork to happen at one point of time. Let's see. Recently, in an interview, Cliff Bleszinski, one of the creators of the much-loved and maligned Gears of War series, as well as other things. I forget the most recent game that he's been working on lately, but sort of a MOBA-ish, first-person shooter-ish type of thing, kind of akin to Overwatch, except a little bit more realistic. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, he was actually contacted by Kojima, the maker of all of the Metal Gear and the Silent Hills and whatnots. And he was specifically contacted in order to try and create a new creation group in L.A., to create the next Silent Hill game.
okay.
And of course, this is before the last iteration that ended up becoming PT that was going to be done with Guillermo del Toro. This is long before that. But it's interesting to me that Kojima actually like reached out directly to him, of all people. But apparently, he ended up kind of destroying the entire thing because he doesn't like L.A., which is where the offices would have been set up.
Okay.
And he apparently has no love for creating things that aren't new IP, or at least at that point.
Oh, okay.
And so him trying to work on somebody else's baby just wasn't going to work for him.
Speaking of new IP, it's called Lawbreakers.
Oh, okay, Lawbreakers. It actually looks pretty interesting. Some interesting little breaks from the Overwatch kind of theme. Anyway, it's just been one of those interesting little stories that cropped up because, yeah, I mean, can you imagine if that sort of personality, like those two personalities, would have been combined for a horror type of movie? It would have been interesting to see what it would have turned out like, or not movie, but video game.
Uh-huh.
Just because a lot of Cliffy B's stuff has been very much about kind of empowering the person into feeling like they're super powered, like linebacker style people that can take like thousands of hits from machine guns and grenades and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious if he applied that to like what's coming at you.
Yeah.
You know, all the different crazy stuff. Like, but I guess we'll never know.
Darn you, Cliffy.
Good or
B.
bad.
Darn you.
Alrighty. So from things hit hard to things that gripped softly. There is a
wait, what?
No, this is a new sort of like robot hand, a new mechanical gripping mechanism.
Okay.
So one of the struggles that a non-natural hand has, or a non-natural gripping device has, is that it cannot sense when it's touching something soft. AKA like an egg, like apply enough or a glass, enough pressure. And
yeah, that's no good.
Exactly. And recently we've covered, last year we covered that there have been several breakthroughs on joining nerves with sensors and creating prosthetic hands that do sense. But you need a neural network to attach to have the sense, you know, be really useful. So at this point. But there's
we also need it in order to effectively fight machines.
Yeah, sure. A group got together and said, well, what if we made a different way of applying the grip to it and used effectively physics other than just friction to hold on it? So they made a device which uses electricity to create a field that when it touches the object, it creates a gripping force without a crushing force.
Whoa.
Yeah. So in this current iteration, what they have is they've demonstrated using like a piece of flexible plastic with a circuit printed onto it, and when they pass electricity through the circuit, it will collapse and grip the egg, and without actually applying much pressure to it, it's the circuit itself that creates the mechanism which allows it to lift an egg or an object like an egg to without causing undue harm to it.
Cracking it.
Exactly.
No.
So it's still kind of an early experimental developmental stage, but it's a really interesting take on the idea of how do you make something that grips softly as opposed to just crushes things.
Without releasing the Kraken.
Yes, without releasing the Kraken, correct.
to become Crack-a-Lackin.
Well, speaking of Crack-a-Lackin, I'll wrap us up with this day in history. Hopefully there's some Crack-a-Lackin stuff in history today on February 15th. So we go to 1804. U.S. frigate Philadelphia, captured and held by Barbary pirates at Tripoli during the Tripolitan War, was set fire to and destroyed by a small group of men led by Stephen Decatur. Then in 1918, Lithuania proclaimed its independence from Russia. Man, I swear they did that one already. That's weird.
They just kept on doing it.
Yeah, well, this year.
Like, it was fun the last time.
Let's do it again.
Right.
Speaking of fun, in 1923, the tomb of King Tutankhamun, discovered in 1922, was opened.
Ooh.
It was opened, releasing the curse and the mummy and having
me.
To get Brendan Fraser to go after the mummy. And
now that was Imhotep.
It's the same person as the cover-up. Speaking of cover-up, 1937, nylon was patented. Then in 1959, Fidel Castro became the leader of Cuba after having ousted the right-wing dictator Fulgencio Batista.
And then in 1938, he was promptly patented, right?
Who?
Fidel Castro. He was patented.
Oh.
Right.
Patent. General patent.
Nice. And 1968, the country's first 911 phone system went into service in Haleyville, Alabama. Then we jump to 1999. You ready to party? Like it's 1999?
I think so.
Well, Turkish commandos captured Kurdish rebel leader Abdullah Öcalan in Kenya, sparking seizures of embassies in Europe by Kurds.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Hopefully something on that list was crack-a-lackin' for someone.
None of that was patented.
No, I guess not. All right, that's going to do it for tonight's show. Hopefully you had a good time and all the patented stuff that happens when you have fun.
This patent system is broken.
It is broken. Like that mic. Mm-hmm. It's broken.
Yes. No, and Jason and I keep trying to crack heads every time we try to go for the mic.
Yeah, I know. I'm just waiting.
Yeah. We're going to wear helmets with like little ram's horns on them next week.
And locked to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we can feel, get our Devil's a Part-Timer hats with the horns on the sides.
Oh, clunk, there you clunk, go. Clunk. There you go.
And it's fitting. Yeah.
It is. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you for tuning in. And of course, just because it's the end of the show, it doesn't mean you still can't participate.
That's right. You can still go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme, or better yet, go to robotsattack.me. That is our own website. We have links to everything that we've talked about there as well. And archives of the show that you can listen to at your pleasure and leisure. And you can, it's never too late to give us feedback. If you're going to do an archive episode, just let us know what episode number it is so we can reference it as well.
That's right. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend, and we'll catch you again next week. All right. Take it easy, everybody.
Raccoon, Barada, Mixto.